All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get started. Mr. Jimmy Yee.
Great. Thank you, committee members and the general public, for attending the second meeting of AB 617 in the city of Shafter. We've got a full agenda tonight, and we want to make sure that we get through it. There are no breaks, so please, again, help yourself with food and drink, which is right over there. So, as I mentioned, we want to get through the agenda because we think it's really important to get some feedback on sources of air pollution in the community. And we're going to have a tabletop exercise here a little bit later on, both for the committee and for the general public to participate in. So you'll definitely have ample opportunity to you know, basically give us your thoughts. A couple of housekeeping issues. As I mentioned at our first inaugural meeting, the bathrooms are out the back and to the left. In addition, there are speaker cards for the general public. If you would like to speak after tonight's proceedings during the public comment, you must and please fill out those cards. They're in the back of the room. If you raise your hand and you'd like to speak, our staff can give you one of those cards. In addition, we have a two-minute limit for public comment, and some of you may have some additional thoughts that you'd like to express that are a little bit more than 2 minutes, and you're more than welcome to fill those out. And again, those comment cards are towards the back, and if you raise your hand, our staff will come and give you those comment cards or a speaker card. Let me introduce Cynthia Martinez and Cody Dixon in the back, and we've got a new team member on board, Rachel Audino, who I think is working registration, but these three individuals helped organize, and they can answer any questions throughout the evening. So please identify with one of them if you need something that is kind of offline. So with that, I want to let you know tonight, the one other issue that is important is we've got dual translation. So it's important for committee and for the general public that there are headsets available that from Spanish to English and English to Spanish. So we want to make sure everyone doesn't lose anything in terms of translation. So please help yourself to a headset for tonight's proceedings. With that, there are also going to be two additional comment periods, both after the charter and the boundary segment of these of this committee hearing, that the general public will be able to weigh in. So if you have additional thoughts on the charter or the boundary issues under the agenda, you'll have an opportunity again after those segments on the agenda to give your input, along with at the latter part of the meeting or the last part of the meeting to give public input as well. So we want to be very transparent. We want to be very open. This is the reason why we are having these committee meetings. The general public is important, and naturally the committee members as well. With that, your feedback will also give us ideas of future agenda items. And as you know, we're going to be meeting from now through July. And one other important item. So the Air District has picked the second Monday of each month to move forward to have these committee hearings. So the second Monday. So March, April, May, June, and July, second Monday. If you could please calendar those, that they will be here moving forward, and they will start at 6 o'clock. So nothing will change. Second Monday of each month. Okay, any questions? Well, with that, let me introduce a familiar face, Dave Warner, the Deputy Air Pollution Control Officer with the Air District, to start with his presentation. Thank you. Dave?
Good evening, everyone. You don't... I'll try that again. Because I wasn't in it. I was having two conversations. Good evening, everyone. Just a note on the every second Monday meeting topic. We'll send that out to everybody and give you a chance to tell us if you have real strong reservations about that. I've already heard from at least one person that that's a problem. Keep in mind, it's going to be hard to get something that's perfect for everyone, but we'll give it our best shot. So you'll have a chance to provide some input on that. So I wanted to thank everyone for coming again tonight. A little brief reminder about how AB 617 is changing the way the Air District is really looking and the Valley is really looking at emissions. You know, historically, we've done everything we can to reduce emissions in the Valley on a regional basis. So as we look at impacts from pollution, quite often we're looking at these emissions on a regional basis all over the San Joaquin Valley. The Air District is responsible for air quality from, you know, down the basically Tehachapi all the way up to the north of Stockton, all the way to the north end of San Joaquin County. It's a huge regional area. AB 617 kind of changes that a little bit for us. It provides us with some resources that we can aim at emissions reductions locally, right here in the community of Shafter. Shafter is one of the lucky two communities in the San Joaquin Valley to receive this kind of attention. So hopefully we can do a great job together as a committee to get some emissions reductions right here in Shafter and the surrounding community. So we've started the process of getting your input on what you think are the causes of local air quality issues. And today we're going to go one more step. We're going to, hopefully, if we can get past, there's a couple of leftover items from last meeting, the community boundary and the charter discussion. If we can get past those, we're going to talk about what the Air District and the state know about emission sources in the community of Shafter. We'll have a presentation about that. And then we'll give you a chance to tell us what you know about emission sources in the community of Shafter and the surrounding area, and what is of most concern to you. And then in future meetings, we can talk about we can start talking about what to do about that, what to do about both figuring out if monitoring those emissions, and then figuring out how to reduce those emissions. But as Jimmy said, that means we need to get through these first two topics very quickly. So I'm kind of keeping fingers and toes crossed that we can do that. Some of you wanted us to revisit and discuss the community boundaries. So we're going to talk about that. It's up first on the agenda. And then there's the charter, the set of rules for the committee. We provided a draft charter to you, and we asked for comments. We didn't really get a whole lot, but we got a few comments that we've tried to address. So I'm going to go through a presentation. I think the presentation on the charter is really important because it really highlights what the community expects to get out of this process. Then we'll turn our attention to the sources of emissions in the community of Shafter. Any questions before we get going on the boundary discussion? Right, let's. Oh, that's pretty dim. You think we can, get some lights? That's a pretty dim picture here. Let me kind of trace the boundaries. Here's the city of Shafter, and then the boundary. You've all had an opportunity to take a look at this in numerous forms, but the boundary is really established by a census tract. We've been had a couple of discussions about expanding the boundaries. We had one comment on the boundary from Tom France, was thinking that if we drew a point in the middle of Shafter and drew a 7-mile radius circle around Shafter, that way we could capture all of the sources that were around the community and also impacting the community. And we could open up the boundary or the committee membership to that area as well. There's a couple of thoughts here that I want to toss out to the committee. First of all, I want to assure everyone here that we're not limited to looking at emission sources within this boundary. We can look outside of this boundary for sources of emissions that impact the boundary, impact the community of Shafter. So from that perspective, it doesn't matter if we've got a 7-mile radius or the current boundaries, we can look outside the boundary for sources of emissions that might need our attention in some way as a committee. So for that reason, I'm thinking that we kind of put that point aside, the fact that, if you expand the boundaries, you bring in more emission sources. So we don't have to do that. The other point that Tom made is that brings in, other people that are going to be concerned about emissions in this general vicinity. And that's probably true. We could open it up and get more people on the committee from, within that 7-mile radius or whatever additional boundaries we want to talk about. But from my perspective, we've got a group of interested parties here. We could expand the boundary, add some more community members, but then we've got a new committee, a new community boundary, and there's going to be people just outside that boundary that might be interested, and so on. So I'm proposing that we stick with the census tract boundary that we came up with originally. We have done one thing that everybody should know about. There are two members here from the community of Mexican Colony, and that's actually outside of the boundary. But we let them in as obviously interested in air quality around the area. So we do have that aberration in our little difference in the way we built the community boundaries and allowed community members in. So with that said, I'm open to hearing any comments, questions about the community boundaries. Again, my hope is we can move quickly on to other topics, but I don't want to squelch any interested comments. Anybody? Yes, Tom.
I think the boundary should be expanded to include residents who consider themselves part of the city of Shafter. And by that I mean, of course, the Mexican colony, but we also have the federal farm labor camp just to the north on Merced and Highway 43. Those people are certainly part of the community while they're here. You have Cherokee Strip extending even further along Shafter Avenue beyond the Mexican colony towards 7th Standard. You have a community north of 7th Standard across the street basically from the wonderful logistics park or whatever it's called today, with all that related trucking and so on. And even those people would say they're part of Shafter. You have the Maple School area to the northwest. Everybody there, I mean, it's, judging by the cars going by my road every morning, half the people in Shafter seem to be taking their kids to school right there in that community, plus all the homes and people that live there already. They all consider themselves part of Shafter. And then pollution sources. You know, if you go north to Kimberlina, you include the California resources, most of their oil wells. Those wells have a potential big impact on the community of Shafter. If you go west a little further, go out towards Jumper, you have the Shafter Wasco landfill, you have the Shafter Oildale sewer farm, you have the and you have a lot of dairies, big, huge factory dairies. We don't want to say the boundaries here and then not include those nearby pollution sources. You know, we need a boundary that sort of, we don't need to add to the people on this committee necessarily from any new group of homes, although I consider myself part of the Maple area. I would like to be considered a resident instead of an EJ representative, although I could be either one. Anyway, I think there's good reason to, that takes us approximately 7 miles around some of the boundaries I'm mentioning. I mean, we can go to the 99 too. It's just a few miles east of here with some heavy industry, but not too many people live in there. But that should be included in some formal way in this whole committee.
Yeah, maybe I might not have been perfectly clear, but on the issue of emission sources, we're going to be able to look outside the boundaries. There's no limit. We can look at every single source of emissions you just mentioned that are outside of the boundaries. Not a problem. And in fact, that's one of the comments that's built into the new version of the charter. It's one of the two comments we put right in the charter. So not an issue. Can we get the other microphone so we can have a little bit quicker back and forth? All right. Right here in the blue.
Do the monitoring locations need to be within the boundary?
No. Yeah, so the question was, do the monitoring facilities that were going to be bringing into play have to be within the community boundaries? And the answer is no. The impacts on the community won't be known from, you know, monitoring done elsewhere. But if we're interested in, you know, tying emissions to a source and doing that kind of monitoring, you know, you have to be near the source.
This is Gustavo Guida with CCJN. I had a question on the boundaries. You were saying that in your opinion, we should stick with the census tract that's already pre-existing, and there is two people here from the Mexican colony that are on there. Is that your interpretation of that's sufficient? And we're as a steering committee, we're not going to explore actually physically expanding the boundaries?
That would be my preference, is that we move on from the boundary discussion tonight and move on, and this is the committee. We don't add more people to the committee. Yes.
Right. Okay, so...
I'm not even on the committee. I'm just here trying to guide the discussion, get to other points of discussion. So if there's strong views otherwise, I would definitely want to hear them.
Yeah, because I think it was very clear that in the last meeting, there was a pretty strong consensus of this, as default, the southern border of the 617 to exclude the actual, physically, the colonies and the Cherokee Strip. I'm pretty sure that, I don't speak for residents, but I'm pretty sure that was echoed in the last meeting that the physical boundaries actually be expanded to the southern portion of it at the minimum.
No other comments?
Yeah, I'm Dora Hernandez-Hara, and I agree with Tom that we should expand like what he was expanding on, and with Gustavo that we should expand at least, to 7th standard to include some of the outlying communities, especially the Mexican Colony, Cherokee Strip, Smith Corner, and all those other ones. So I think it's important that we do expand.
Buenas tardes. Sabemos que la contaminación No se encierra nomás aquí en Shafter. Y que no nada más son las cosas que contaminan aquí. Hasta las lecherías también con el aire explotan la contaminación con mini partículas que se van en el aire. Aparte, la tierra donde haya petróleo va a estar contaminado. Mi pregunta es, ¿nomás Shafter tiene petróleo, hoyos de petróleo? Sabemos que no. Y yo estoy de acuerdo en que sí se expanda más. Gracias.
So I'm going to try one more time because I'm evidently not making myself clear on the emission sources side of things. We can and will look outside of the city of Shafter at all the emission sources the committee wants to look at. We don't have to expand the boundaries for that purpose. There's only one purpose to expand the boundaries that I'm aware of, and that would be to include more people onto the committee by expanding, you know, if we went down to the Cherokee Strip, then there would be more people able to sign up for the committee because the community boundaries would be expanded. That's really the only reason that I'm aware of, so let me know if there's anybody with a different opinion on that.
Me parece bien, pero ¿qué pasaría si las personas que no están bien involucradas en esto no aparecen más? ¿Se va a cancelar? ¿Se va a quitar?
I'm not really sure I understand the question.
La pregunta es,
so le voy a explicar lo que les dije. So interpreter explained to her that what you said, that the only reason to expand the limits is to include other people from the new areas in this committee, but as far as visiting the sources of the emissions, that is something that will be done, all the sources that affect the area, no matter where they stand or are. Correct?
That is correct.
So es correcto lo que le dije. Van a visitar todos los de personas. Más personas es la única razón que usted quiere ampliar los límites. Y se van a visitar los problemas, pero ya no va a haber más personas. I think she understands.
Gracias.
Yeah, Gustavo, CCJ, and I think this is like a very key moment to like underline the flaw of part of this chart, this steering committee, is if we come to this, this crossroads of boundaries where some committee members have spoken out and there has been, a recommendation from the air districts, like voting versus consensus. Like, so from here on, so moving forward on the boundaries issue, like how is that going to be decided? So if it's going to be the steering committee, what's the processes that are going to happen to continue to talk about this boundary or to leave it as is?
Well, right now I haven't heard any contrary comments about the boundary. I haven't heard anybody say, let's leave the boundary the way it is.
Dave, to your comments, I believe that the issue of pollution sources is addressed with your statements that pollution sources outside of the defined boundary, whatever it happens to be, will be analyzed and will be used as part of this study for this group. I heard Tom say that he didn't feel like we needed to necessarily add more people as long as we are representing those groups. We aren't going to have every street or every neighborhood represented. I think your point that we have folks outside of this defined area that are participating does add that representation outside, and we have the public available that's going to be involved in the process, either directly or through us as committee members. I would expect that I and each of us would hear from our friends and neighbors in the community that are affected, and we'll be able to bring those perspectives here. You can't have a committee made of 19,000 people to run this sort of thing. So for just efficiency and common sense, it makes sense to say we need to define a committee that's manageable, that people can participate, and that that the sources will be properly represented. So I would say I'm in favor of using the census block that you've defined and go with the representation that we have both in and outside that boundary and make certain going forward that we do analyze the pollution sources wherever they may be.
Anyone else? So let me put this out to those of you that have argued for an expanded boundary. Are there people that you want to bring into the committee? Are there people that you're aware of that feel like they should be able to get on the committee and just haven't been able to? Because that's what we're really talking about. Let me express a little bit about my hesitance to expand the boundary for that purpose. Number one, we've started to form, you know, an understanding of what this committee is all about. Bringing in new people, we're going to have to start that all over with those people anyway, at least. That might educate the rest of us a little bit more too, but starting from, you know, ground zero is not something I'm really anxious to do. We can overcome that. But to Scott's point about the, you know, expanding the boundary to include more people, it seems to me a never-ending thing. You expand the boundary a little bit to include more people, and then there's going to be people over, you know, just beyond that boundary that want to be in. You know, I don't know where to draw those lines. So my preference is to stay with the committee we've got and put right in the charter that we commit to looking at sources outside of the boundary.
Well, let me repeat a little bit of what I said. There are sources that affect the town of Shafter that are in Stockton and in China, if you believe the Air District. But there are also sources that are very near to Shafter that are not in this boundary. There are people outside of the boundary that are affected by nearby sources that are outside the boundary. We need to respect the residents of Shafter, and we need to be looking at the nearby sources of pollution the hardest. If we're going to be here so that we look at NOx emissions that are coming from Fresno and what can we do about it, we're wasting our time, because that's already being looked at. We're here to look at local sources of pollution within a certain boundary, and by defining what we consider local sources of pollution, we make an important step. And by defining which people we feel are important to this community, we make an important statement, too. And so I think expanding the boundary, and we don't have to go back and reform the committee, but then everybody is clear about what people are important to this process, which residents. And we kind of have an idea where to look first for local pollution sources, too. You know, how far out are we going to go? Because if you leave it vague, that if it's so vague that we just say we're going to look at pollution sources outside of the community, there's no limit there, and things can be said, things can be pushed aside or brought in, you know, at will. I think we need a good idea of what we're looking at first here. What affects the local community and the local residents? And it's an artificial boundary to draw it so small that it's just around the concentrated part of the city only. So,
all right, how about this, Tom? We'll commit to looking at sources that affect the community within a 7-mile radius of Shafter. I'm not sure why you're talking about NOx from Fresno, because what I'm talking about is local sources of pollution that are outside of the community boundaries but are affecting the community. But if there's, you know, there's something magic about 7 miles for you, you have my commitment. We'll look at sources in that area. If there's something, you know, that you feel impacts Shafter that's within that area, that's great. I honestly don't think we need to expand the boundaries of the community to do what you're asking. That's what I've been saying. We can look at local sources. I'm not saying anything about NOx emissions in Fresno. Well, then we'll consider them very important. I mean, we obviously do. Everybody is important. This process happened to pick the community of Shafter as the starting point for this whole process. And one of the things in the charter that we'll talk about in a few minutes is that this committee is expected to talk to their neighbors, to talk to people that are members of the community. And I'm not saying that the people that live outside of this boundary are unimportant. There are emission sources that are going to affect people outside of this community boundary. We know that. I mean, there's emission sources all over the valley. So I think, yeah, we need the microphone, whatever it is.
Sorry, not to be redundant, but just so it's clear with everybody, and just to reiterate that the boundary we're talking about is the boundary for committee members, correct? Okay, just so it's to be heard and understood. And in no way is that limiting where we're going to be gathering data from for pollution or anything for that is involved with what the committee's doing. This is just the participation and members of the committee, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I personally feel that we have an amazing amount of participation from the community. I think it's widespread from rural as well as in town for people that are on the committee. And I feel like the committee as a whole would also agree that if anyone feels unrepresented and felt like they were uninvited, we will definitely have like an open time for them to share their views and no one will be excluded. So I think for the sake of the agenda, I don't know what the processes are, if we need to make motions to carry, but I think the boundary is set how it is. And like you said, we're going to be able to move forward in what we're trying to get done here, as well as we will be able to monitor pollution sources from outside of that boundary. So like Tom was saying, we have the dairies and other things out there. Those will be monitored. As far as participation, I feel like we have equal representation. So I don't know the processes to carry on, but I feel that the boundary is sufficient to represent the community.
And I would, for my input, I would support Tom's proposal that we put into the charter a commitment to study pollution sources within that 7-mile radius from whatever defined point you're comfortable with, Tom, if it's the, you know, central and 43 or some pick a point, but that we build that into the charter and his proposal to keep the committee going. I think that sends a message that we do consider all the folks within that range important. The pollution sources within that certainly will be considered in their effect on folks, whether they're on the committee or not. That's so I would support Tom's proposal.
And also the second part of the proposal that we also consider the health of those residents that are not within the boundaries when we're doing
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's part of the deal.
Yeah. Tom, what do you think? Well, anybody have any objection to that addendum to the charter, which we're going to talk about right now? If not, we can move on. All right. Consensus.
Great. Thank you, Dave. Any members of the public who would like to weigh in on the issue of the boundary at all? Yes, if you'd like to. Cody. Could just state your name and if you represent an organization.
Hi, I'm Paulina Torres with the Center on Race, Poverty, and the Environment. I just want to be clear with the boundaries that you're talking about. That's just for community participation because our understanding, so the idea of this whole AB 617, right, is to reduce emission, create syrups, reduce emission reductions, all that. So when all is said and done, when you're looking at whether or not this program actually did that, are you going to be looking at just Shafter in that map, or will you be including the Colonia Smith's Corner? Because those two assessments are going to be very different, and I think that's part of why the folks, more than just being on the committee, want to be included because they want to be included in that assessment.
So I don't believe that the goal of AB 617 is to reduce local emissions that are affecting disadvantaged communities. I'm not concerned about whether those emissions reductions and the health impacts and associated benefits with reductions in those emissions occur in the Shafter City Center or in, you know, 2 miles south of Shafter. So as we put together our community emission reduction plan, I'm sure there will be a whole series of questions about those impacts. And when we set targets for what kinds of emissions reductions we expect to see or some whatever metrics we use to judge our progress. But I think it's way too early to prejudge where those discussions go and, you know, where the metrics are set, what locations they're set, those kinds of things. But I don't know if that answered your question.
Not quite, because that assumes, you know, when those conversations do happen, the folks from the colony, or the folks who want the areas that aren't included might want to include those areas in the metrics, but then other folks might say, well, they're not part of the boundaries. Do we need to do emissions reductions there? And so by including those areas, we would avoid that issue altogether, right?
Well, Tom had a two-part proposal, or a proposal that addressed two issues. One was that we look at emission sources outside of the boundary. And, yeah, he suggested 7 miles and, you know, I'm happy to include that. I don't see any other suggestions. The other piece was a commitment to recognize the value of reductions on for the people that live closer to those sources that aren't within the community boundaries. So I think that's going to be covered in the charter.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else from the public, any input on the boundary issue? Great. So for committee members, we started the dialogue at the first inaugural meeting regarding the charter. You all should have received a draft. At this point, we'd like some input. Dave will be making a short presentation in terms of the feedback that he's gotten, but also we want to highlight some key decision points moving forward on the charter, which will help guide us in the future. Dave?
Jimmy's got that fancy lapel mic. I've got three things I have to hold on to here. All right. So as I mentioned earlier, we're going to try to move through this one as well so that we can get to talking about emission sources. So let me go through this presentation really quickly. And I think it is very important because some of the questions we've heard about, you know, I'm not sure about process, some of those things are going to be answered by going through this charter. So when we first were trying to figure out how to do this first time anywhere type of a process, we started looking at other groups like this, other committees like this, and some have been around for a little while, and both in the committees that are out there that are doing something like this or you know whatever similar, and in ARB's guidance to the State Air Resources Board's guidance to the districts, the air districts. So just to make sure everybody understands, the State Air Agency guides provided some guidance to the local air agency, my agency, how to go about this AB 617 thing. And they thought that it would be important to have a set of rules, and most of those committees call that set of rules a charter. This components of a charter actually comes straight out of the state's guidance to us on how to set up a charter, the state's guidance to all of us, actually. The more we looked into it, the more we realized that we didn't have to reinvent the wheel either, because there are a lot of things out there that we could draw from, some good examples of charters. So in an effort to cut back the amount of time we spend on coming up with a charter and try to deal with improving air quality instead of process, we put together a draft as a starting point for your consideration using really the best examples of a charter that we could find out there. In this draft, we tried to cover these main components that ARB set out for us. Like I said, most of these do come straight out of the guidance for AB 617. So let's talk about these components. I won't be going through this slide, but on each of the subsequent slides, we'll be talking about these. Chose the right button the first time. Things are looking up. The committee is going to want to identify air quality concerns, both sources of pollution and those that the pollution impacts, as we've just had a pretty good discussion of. So that's one of the objectives of the steering committee that is contained in this charter. We think you're going to want to review available information on air quality and sources of pollution and ways to get the reductions in emissions. Your committee could commit to working with others in your neighborhood to get their information and then to give information as it comes out of this committee, and that's a part of this charter. And the last bullet is kind of the reason the committee exists. The committee serves as an advisory as an advisor to the air district as we go about developing both air quality monitoring plans to be put in place by July of this year, and a community emission reduction program that's to get adopted before October of this year. So we'll talk about those things a little bit later, but in fulfilling the committee's objectives, most charters define roles and responsibilities of the committee, such as, in this case, helping the district put together its community emission reduction program. This is one of the central goals of this committee. And in that, in helping the district put together its community emission reduction program, we'll want to discuss as a committee and consider community issues and contributing sources to develop a shared understanding of the community's air pollution challenges, who has the responsibility, the regulatory authority to address those challenges, propose strategies for a community emissions reduction program, so all kinds of ways to potentially reduce emissions, mechanisms for engaging other agencies where their authority is controlling the source of emissions, approaches to additional community outreach. How do we get, you know, the good things that come out of this committee out to the community? And really other topics of interest. Another key role of the committee is defined by what the state expects to see out of the process, including the things that a state expects, the state expects to see in a community emission reduction program. How community engagement is achieved, what the community looks like, where the emissions are coming from, what we've chosen as targets as we try to achieve those emissions reductions, how we achieve those targets, those metrics for success, however we're going to measure progress. All these things are required by the State Air Resources Board to be a part of the community emission reduction program. So the district will be responsible for formulating that community emission reduction program with your guidance and advice. And in terms of committee roles and responsibilities, the charter clarifies that that government officials' advisory role in the committee. And the charter talks about, I bet you I'm like two slides behind, huh? Keep me honest, guys. And the charter talks about expectations about community member participation. For instance, committee members are going to miss a lot if they miss a meeting. So perhaps there should be an expectation that they attend all of them. We've actually seen that in other committee charters, but we don't think that's really always practical. And so we've come up with an alternative, a concept where each member can identify one alternate member to take their place when they can't attend. So each of you is able to assign an alternate member if you would like. And our team here, Heather, behind the camera there, would be able to help you out with that process. Again, this is all in the charter. We offered a suggestion in the charter for revoking committee membership if a member and the member's alternate are not attending the meetings. I don't know, it seems a little over the top to me, but we did see that in other committee charters, and we did go ahead and put it in this one. Meeting procedures are captured in the charter. For instance, procedures for making decisions. This is pretty much a perfect time to talk about this. We just went through that process, a consensus building process. We'll also be doing consensus building processes using like we did last time, where the committee was able to actually identify the most important source of emissions or the most important issue to them on the post-its that we had up on the walls. We're asking the committee to commit to this deliberation and consensus process, you know, rather than some straightforward majority rule vote process. We've actually heard concerns, and I've heard it from actually more than one perspective, shall I say, from more than one interest group, that the concern is that one interest group will build a block of votes, and you know, if they're successful in building a block of votes, we've kind of eliminated that ability to go through a process of deliberation and hopefully consensus building, because we have a vote and the guys that have, you know, cornered the committee get their way every time. And again, I've heard that as a concern from business and industry. I've heard that as a concern from the environmental justice community. So I think the deliberation and consensus process is the way to go. We don't want to have that single-minded perspective being driving the committee. We're here to listen to the entire community. We want open and balanced discussion on the topics, and where consensus can be reached, like it just was, we're going to be thrilled. Where consensus can't be reached, it's my agency's obligation to make sure that that all perspectives are captured in the final products that come out of this process, the air quality monitoring plans, the community emission reduction program that my agency is responsible for putting together. So that's decision-making processes. There are some other additional key considerations when it comes to meetings. For instance, the charter says that meeting schedules can be adjusted if the committee wants it adjusted, and that the committee has a role in suggesting topics for future agendas, and that the agenda should contain certain information, you know, normal time, date, duration of meetings, locations, agenda items. All of this, again, is in the charter. And finally, a pretty non-controversial part of the charter is a commitment for activities of the committee to be accessible. Hold meetings where disabled individuals can participate. For instance, you guys aren't keeping me honest. Where disabled individuals can participate, for instance, or provide interpretation services. The district has been providing Spanish language translation and interpretation for meetings and materials, but we'd be open to expanding to other language if the need presents itself. That kind of brings us to a couple of comments that we received as we went through this process. I was actually expecting more. In fact, I was promised more, but we didn't receive them. So we addressed the comments that we did receive. So let me talk about those really quickly. The charter, one of the comments we received was the charter should clearly state the sources of emissions that exist outside the boundaries or the community's boundary, but that may impact the community can be treated as if they were within the community boundaries. We've done that. We've added to the charter something like that. I've heard the consensus of the committee that we also add a statement about supporting the community members or the members of their communities that live outside of the boundary that are impacted by those sources that we're looking at. So we will do that. It was also commented that the advisory role of committee members who are representatives of government agencies should be moved from attachment A, which is actually an attachment to the charter, which is AB 617, Community Steering Committee Selection Criteria, to the charter itself. To be clear, this is the section from that selection criteria that says that government agency members of this committee are serving in an advisory role. Just somebody wanted to make sure that that was actually in the charter rather than in the selection criteria. So And it doesn't add anything new. And then finally, we had asked for comments on whether we needed a code of conduct or a participation agreement. And since no one commented on that, we included the participation agreement that we'd already prepared last meeting. I'm not going to go through it since you've had it for a month, unless you all want me to. It's pretty basic. Probably the best thing it does is say that you all agree to be nice to each other even when you disagree. So we'll keep the participation agreement in unless there's significant objection today. And so with that, I'd like to go ahead and, I don't know, should Jimmy, you want to take the, I guess we didn't really formulate any real key questions. So I'm going to open it up, just like the boundary discussion, open it up for discussion with the committee. We've got a hand up in the back there.
You're looking for sources inside or outside of the area, but what if a solution is outside of the boundaries that affects or improves pollution within the boundaries?
I guess I should do this.
Yes. No, that's exactly, yeah, that was the point of the conversation, was that we will look outside of the community, and if we see opportunities for emissions reductions that my agency or other agencies can do something about, or that we can direct incentive funding to, some method of getting some emissions reductions, even outside of the community, we are able to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, on decision-making, you talk about consensus, which is the ideal, but there may be times when we want to take a vote, and is it the idea of this charter that government officials would not vote, or they would?
Right now, they would not.
Right now, they would not. And personally, I agree with that.
Maybe I'll explain that a little bit, because it's a sensitive issue. But we've heard that government agencies, government officials have a certain amount of decision-making power that's inherent in their position, and that when they speak with a vote, that they would tend to dominate, and people would look to them as leading their vote. I actually would love to have their vote. I would love to have everybody feel like an equal member of the committee. But I think that the way the direction has been going, the input that we've received, that's how the charter was drafted right now.
So there's some gray areas here, though. If someone works for the city of Shafter and lives in the city, but they're not elected, they would probably be considered a government official, right? If they work for the city. I mean, I think someone's here also who works like for Shafter Recreation and Parks. Is that true? I mean, he's not here today, but okay. Right. So if we're going to say, government officials and city officials, including elected officials, shouldn't be able to vote, which I think a lot of people agree with, but where do we draw the line on that?
Well, right now we're drawing it at the what we discussion have and consensus. And
yeah.
So far, I'm hopeful that it'll work. You know, but you're quite right. If we get to a point where we feel like we're going to take a vote on something, we can't get past something, we've got to have a decision, we're going to do a majority rule vote, you know, if the committee wants to do that, you know, then you're quite right. The government officials, the people that are listed as government officials on the community list, on the community steering committee list, would not be voting.
No, I'm just questioning who are those people. I know we have four people listed right now, but the example I just gave of how would you consider the rec department? Where should they be on this? With you or with the residents? Yeah, but when they set up the roster, they probably didn't know that he worked for the city of Shafter. Or the rec department.
I don't know. Is it really worth this much strain on the environment of this meeting? I mean, to me, we're going to be working through these things with consensus. If we have to do a vote, I've lost control of the process. So to me, we're arguing about much about nothing. But, you know, if there's a city representative that's now listed as a resident, they should be listed as a government official if they're in any place of authority. If this is a grounds worker, I totally disagree with that.
But we're not going to go through this list and vet everybody. And
yeah, I wasn't planning on it.
Because basically this list was made by people stating who they were. Accepted at face value, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I'm a resident of Visalia, and if we had a community group like this, and you know, I would feel no hesitation whatsoever to put in an application and call myself a resident of Visalia, you know, if that's one of the options available to me. I just don't understand the issue here. We've got people that live in the community that are concerned about air quality in the community. We've said what the rule is. If they're in a position of authority, they should be a government official. If they're not, then they can be on the residents list.
Well, so, the only issue I have is if something comes to a vote, who's allowed to vote?
Those are who is allowed to vote. Residents are allowed to vote. Businesses are allowed to vote. Government officials are not.
It was just really quick. I wanted to clarify. I believe everybody applied to be on the committee based on the position they were applying for. So if you were a resident and you applied as a resident, you had to show proof of residency. As a government, a person working for the government, I applied and had to show proof that I worked for the government in that position. So I think it's clear if you're a resident, you applied as a resident, and you don't have any controlling power as a government agency, because that was vetted by the Air District, correct?
Well, we didn't do a whole lot of vetting, honestly. We took the applications as received. We did vet the address that they gave us, that the applicants gave us. If they said they were a resident and they didn't live within the boundaries, we said, no, you can't be. There were industry representatives that were industry-wide representatives, not a representative of a company within the boundaries, but you know, large industry groups. They were not, you know, they didn't meet the specs, so they were out. But we didn't vet, you know, we didn't make some people show us their ID. But I totally agree with your point that when somebody applies and says, I'm a resident, I'm taking it at face value, that's their perspective.
Thank you. Under the membership, when designating alternatives, is that something that we would have to like assign and say this is my alternative, or would that be kind of just predetermined? Like, if I if you know they take this Gus sign and put alternative, is that something that's fine?
No, we, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked. We actually have a process where the alternate would file an application, and we would work with both you and the alternate to make sure you both agree. And then they actually get officially assigned as your alternate.
Would it be possible just to like default send an alternative form to everyone on the steering committee?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie.
We'll do that. That's a great idea. Any other discussions on the charter? All right. With the changes that Tom suggested, I'm going to go ahead and finalize it and send it out, and we'll let you go.
Hi, thank you.
Let me take that back. I'm sorry. We definitely want to take public comment on this issue before we finalize any decision.
Right. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to talk about the charter and any thoughts before we close this agenda item out?
Very quickly, we will email the alternate applications out to everyone. If you do not have an email address, we have about 7 hard copies, and we can give you one tonight. If you do have an email address, you'll get it via email.
Just to be clear on the consensus voting, so if consensus cannot be reached, then it will move to a vote? Or because you mentioned at the last meeting that all sides will be represented when reasonable or something to that effect. So I just want everyone to be clear what the procedure is.
Sure, yeah, and we mentioned it briefly today as well. Mm-hmm. When we can reach consensus like we did today, I'm going to be thrilled every time.
Right.
But let's keep in mind what the end product here is. The end product is to take the advice and input of this committee and fold it into the district's community emission reduction program and air quality monitoring plan. If we don't get consensus on an issue, we're still taking that advice. And if we don't get consensus, we will make sure that in the final products that the district produces, those varied perspectives are known and presented in our documentation. So they don't go away. They become a living part of the process.
Right. So for those varied perspectives, would it not be helpful to have the steering committee kind of do a disclosure or affiliation? Like, I worked with environmental justice group, and this is my position, and then I'm a resident but I'm affiliated with industry to capture right in the documents all of these perspectives. I don't see how it would work without that kind of disclosure or sharing of information.
I've heard that comment a couple of times. Some people express it as a conflict of interest forum or something. Yeah, I honestly don't see the value. I think we're gathering perspectives. When you don't have a vote, I'm not sure it matters where those perspectives come from. They're community members, whether they're affiliated with a business in the community or a business outside of the community that we might be looking at, or an environmental justice organization. I'm not sure that I see the real need to do that. But I'm open to hearing comments from the committee on that topic.
Anyone else? So just some housekeeping with regards to the charter. We'll be updating it on our website, both in English and in Spanish. And for those of you who were unable to submit emails, we'll be mailing out hard copies as well. So with...
Yeah, that's a great point. Scott was asking the two changes that I mentioned, and I think it's such a great point because it's really only one. We already talked about the looking at facilities outside the boundary. I think we said we would put in the 7-mile radius kind of discussion or something generally along those lines. And then the one is acknowledging that those sources are also impacting the health of people outside the community, and that we should be cognizant of that and paying attention to that as we go about the process. Right. Okay. So moving on to kind of what I thought of as the primary presentation for the day, one of our program managers from the Air District who's responsible for actually a whole lot of things, but one of them is making sure the district understands what kinds of pollution are being put out into the air by all of the permitted, all of the stationary sources of pollution that we regulate. So he's going to talk about not only that, but also other sources of pollution that we're aware of and kind of set up the beginnings of a discussion about where sources of pollution, where emissions are coming from in the area.
Thanks, Dave. So my name is Brian Clements, and I'm the program manager at the Valley Air District. And I'll be going over that emissions summary. One thing of note, I'm not sure how much this presentation is worth, maybe nothing. No, I'm just kidding, because... based on the discussion earlier, you know, we'd be looking at emission sources outside the boundary. This presentation and the emission summaries are based on the activities inside the boundary. So keep that in mind as we go through this. But it still has a lot of value bringing perspective, and you get a feel for the emissions. Although, of course, as discussed earlier, we'll need to add those sources outside the boundary. First, I'd like to, though, get started with a little bit of background. I'm going to use the station here for my notes on air pollution and how air pollution is identified. There are two main categories of air pollution: criteria pollutant emissions and air toxic emissions. This first slide identifies criteria pollutant emissions. So I'll go through that quickly. Total organic gases, reactive organic gases, and volatile organic compounds, or TOG, ROG, and VOC for short, are all volatile compounds. Volatile meaning they evaporate into the atmosphere. And these compounds contain carbon. For all intents and purposes, VOC and ROG are the same thing in a subset of TOG. Examples of VOCs are vapors from gasoline. So if you say at a gas station, if you smell gasoline, you know, when you're pumping gas in your car, those are VOCs. Another example would be paint vapors. So if you're smelling something from paint, those could contain VOCs. There's also VOCs come out of engine exhaust, such as tailpipes from cars and trucks, and also some stationary sources like engines and boilers. The next few pollutants, carbon monoxide, oxides of nitrogen, oxides of sulfur, or CO, NOx, and SOx for short, are also created through combustion primarily, like, again, from car and truck engine exhausts. Of note, NOx and VOCs combined with heat and sunlight form ozone in the summertime, which is harmful to humans and one of the main focuses of the district's air quality attainment plans. PM, PM10, and PM2.5 are varying sizes of particulate matter. We have a picture here on the slide that shows how small PM10 and PM2.5 can be versus a human hair and beach sand, just to give some perspective on how tiny those particles can be. And definitely PM10, PM2.5 especially can be lodged into the respiratory system and even the bloodstream. Particulate matter examples include dust and smoke, including from on-field ag activities such as harvesting and tilling, but all internal combustion engine exhausts, such as from cars and trucks, contain PM10 as well. And the fine particulates that come out of diesel exhaust are toxic to humans as well. Ammonia is another criteria pollutant, and examples of that, there's ammonia generated at dairies, certain combustion processes, and as well as other sources such as consumer products. On to the next main category, which is air toxic emissions. I spared everybody by not listing them all because there's upwards of 797 toxics that are identified by the state. CARB, or the California Air Resources Board, lists those, and they're available to be seen. EPA identifies, the Environmental Protection Agency, the federal agency, identifies 190 compounds. And I give some main examples here. The toxics can be in the form, like I mentioned, of from diesel engine trucks, particulate matter, or diesel PM. Benzene and formaldehyde from cars and trucks using gasoline, those are exhaust toxics. Benzene, ethyl benzene, and naphthalene are common vapors in painting coatings. Benzene, toluene, ethyl benzene, and xylene, or BTEX for short, is present in gasoline. That's what you're smelling if you smell gasoline, and also from some oil field activities as well. And toxics can also be in the form of not only volatiles, but also particulate matter, which can be metals such as lead, chrome, and nickel. And those are present even in, can be field dust or road dust. So those criteria and toxic emissions can be created from various sources, and we've classified them here into four main categories. First, we call our permitted sources that the district issues permits for stationary sources. These are the sources that the air district regulates, and we issue permits. I list a few here as examples. We issue permits to gas stations, auto body shops, any site that has a backup diesel generator of a certain size, and oil industry activities as well. Within the boundary of Shafter, the current boundary that's drawn, we've identified 31 facilities that we've issued permits for. Again, as the discussion continues and we identify sources outside of the boundary, this number will change, obviously. The next category is mobile sources identified by the state and federal jurisdictions. Of course, these are cars and trucks. For your on-road sources, that is. And most of the emissions in Shafter from on-road vehicles occur on the main roadways, such as the 43 and Santa Fe and the Lerdo Highway and Shafter Avenue. And I have a heat map on one of the later slides to indicate that. And mobile off-road sources as well, these numbers are provided to us by the state, as I'll get to. But these sources are also under state and federal jurisdiction and include sources such as ag tractors, balers, harvesters, forklifts, whether it's ag or non-ag, and other construction equipment, heavy-duty, dirt-moving equipment. There's also another category, so sort of a catch-all that isn't included in these others, is called area-wise sources, and depending on the source, there could be a different, it's basically covered by various agencies depending on what it is. Some of the primary categories in this area are residential fuel combustion, which are your fireplaces and heaters, water heaters, things like that. Consumer products, over-the-counter things, you're buying cleaning supplies or hairspray. I don't use much hairspray anymore, but that could be one. Colognes, things like that. those can give off VOCs and other pollutants. Pesticides and fertilizers, farming, you know, on-field activities, that kicking up dust, cooking, your charbroilers from restaurants is another example. Wind-blown dust and road dust are some others, to name a few of many. So to quantify the emissions, first, for stationary sources, we ask that our permitting facilities report their emissions to us annually. And we go through a process to verify and quantify those emissions based on what's submitted to us, and we report those numbers to the state. But those emissions are quantified basically using two main things, which is an annual process or fuel rate or usage rate combined with and multiplied by an emission factor. And these emission factors can be developed. We like to use the best available data to us, but these emission factors come from maybe there's on-site monitoring at the site. Maybe there was a source test done to represent the emissions. It could be EPA or ARB data. Maybe there was a representative test done somewhere. Maybe there was a permit limit established by some knowledge of the operation and the manufacturer's equipment and specifications, or any other data that represents the best source of the emission factor. And I'll give an example. If the amount of fuel used is reported in, say, gallons per year, and we have the emission factor, pounds of emissions per gallon, well, you multiply those two, and we would have the air pollution or the emissions in pounds per year emitted into the atmosphere. So that's what we do for our permitted sources. So this is the Shafter emission summary that we have to date. Again, as I mentioned, this is based on what's being generated in the current boundary. This will obviously have to be revisited and updated once we look outside the boundary. But so what this is the table on the left is the emissions in tons per year, and we put three main pollutants there: NOx, PM2.5, and VOCs, and we've identified those emissions by the four categories that I talked about. So you can see the individual contributions from those categories, and then we also have the total there. And then the table on the right represents the same information, but in percentage of the total pollutant, of the total bipollutant. So, for example, if we're looking at the NOx column, and the total is 137.6 tons per year, that equates to 100% of the NOx. And so if you want to determine the contribution percentage-wise from whatever category it is, then you would look at that first column. For example, stationary sources contribute 2.3% of the NOx emissions. The on-road mobile sources are 69%. The mobile off-road is 17.5%, and the area-wide is 11%, just to go through one example. But really, no matter how you look at this, which pollutant you're looking at, you can tell that the primary source of emissions, based on the information we know now, is from mobile sources and area-wide sources. We also have the bullet at the bottom identifies the air toxics emissions that I was talking about. We have those identified for our permitted stationary sources. That's one thing that's reported and calculated, 0.62 tons per year. We don't have the mobile and area-wide toxics just yet. That's a work in progress. We're working with ARB on that. In fact, this week we were talking about that analysis, so that should be coming next time as part of the update. The other important thing I want to note about this summary, and it goes with any of the following slides, is that this is an estimate of the air pollution going into the atmosphere. It's a count of the emissions, so you can get a feel for the magnitude. It doesn't translate to impact or health risk on any one individual. That's further analysis needs to be done on that. There's a lot of things that go into that kind of analysis, you know, including distances from the source to the receptor, how that pollution is being put into the atmosphere, how, you know, the temperature, the velocity of the emission source. Many things go into that. All weather and meteorological data go into that, wind speeds and many things. So that's something that we do, but that's not represented here. This is just an emissions inventory, so to speak, an emissions summary. So now I'll go into the specifics of each category. As mentioned, we totaled up the emissions from the individual air district permitted facilities, and that's what this slide is about, the stationary source emissions. So the top three tables, we've done that for NOx, PM2.5, and VOCs, and we've listed the top five facilities in the Shafter boundary that are contributing to those emissions. And the TPY stands for tons per year if you're looking at the numbers, and the facilities are identified there. And the bottom table is the air toxics, also in tons per year. And there we've identified the actual toxic pollutant as well. That's coupled along with those facilities. So those facilities are located, again, in the boundary. This is the map of all the facilities we have in Shafter, which is the 31. Of course, there needs to be an updated map and identification of additional facilities if we're since we'll be looking outside the boundary. But we also have this map printed out for further discussion after these slides. So now on to area-wide emissions. Again, we've looked at the top five contributors from area-wide categories for this purpose. And this represents almost all of the emissions anyways, the top five do. And we've done that for three pollutants, again, NOx, VOCs, and PM2.5. I'll go through each of these rows so that to bring a little more information about what these are. So the first table on the left, residential fuel combustion, 9.1 tons a year per NOx. So that's wood burning, fireplaces include as well as natural gas and other combustion devices at residences, including stoves and fireplaces, space heaters, water heaters, things like that. The next four, food and ag processing, service and commercial, manufacturing and industrial, and other fuel combustion are all fuel combustion sources like boilers and heaters and ovens. The difference is they're just different in different sectors of industry. No, the question does the residential fuel combustion include ag burning, which is no, that's a separate quantification. This is just residential fuel combustion for like inside the house, like fireplaces and things like that. That the ag burning is captured elsewhere. Onto the VOC table. So the top contributor is consumer products, 30 tons per year. Again, those over-the-counter type purchases, cleaning supplies and things like that. Architectural coatings and solvents, painting. If you're painting buildings and the solvents that go along with that, that's what that category is. Pesticides and fertilizer use on ag lands. This number is provided by DPR to the state. Printing, that means like ink usage, VOCs from ink. And petroleum marketing, those are fugitive VOCs from valves, tanks, pumps during marketing, which means transportation pipeline, rail, as well as plants. For PM2.5, the top contributor is farming. So these are on-field activities creating dust and PM2.5, tilling and harvesting. Cooking is the second category, which is commercial charbroiling and other cooking. Windblown dust, kind of self-explanatory. Residential fuel combustion, which is the same one that's in the NOx category. And unpaved road dust is the last one. This is the heat map that I was talking about. This was provided by the Air Resources Board. which kind of shows the relative distribution of the emissions. The darker the color, the more red it is, the more emissions are generated there. So you can see the, it's a little tough to see on this, but the main areas of emissions are the main roadways, which is Highway 43 and Santa Fe, and along with Lerdo and Shafter. It's actually, and then the light yellow is, you know, obviously less emissions. It's about a 10-to-1 ratio of the red to yellow. Yeah, and this is also represents two areas of vehicle light. The one on the left is light duty vehicles, and the one on the right is heavy duty vehicles. Heavy duty are your big rigs and trucks like that. It's actually defined by 14,000 pounds gross vehicle weight. So anything that's that much or more is heavy duty. Anything lighter than that, you know, personal car, autos, and pickup trucks, things like that, are in the light duty category. And this is a summary of the mobile source emissions in Shafter. Again, all these emissions summaries, every slide I've been going through is based on an analysis that of the current boundary and the emissions being generated in that boundary. I just want to make sure that's clear, that we understand where the conversation went, and the updated charter identifies, you know, factoring in emissions outside the boundary. These numbers don't reflect that yet. So these are the mobile source emissions in tons per year for each of the mobile categories: on-road, heavy-duty, on-road, light-duty, and off-road vehicles. And this is actually the last slide I had. And I'll pass it back to Jimmy for the next part of the discussion.
Great. Thank you, Brian. So this is the part of the evening where committee members and the public, if they choose to participate, we get to stretch our legs. So on this side of the room, for committee members, we have maps of possible sources of air pollution within the community that are both inside and outside the boundaries. What we would like is for the committee to break up into groups and to basically put your comments on the maps. There are post-its on there. You can look at the sources. There's a key on the side of them. And we will basically, you know, cage those comments for later discussion. For the public, the same map is on this side of the room, and we ask for your participation, if you so choose to also give your comments. There are post-its and markers available for you as well. So we're running a tad behind. If we can take just 5 to 10 minutes for this tabletop exercise, why don't we just go ahead and commit, if you could go to this side of the building and just break up into groups. There's enough maps and there's enough markers for you folks to weigh in on. Thank you. And for the public, the maps are over here on this side.
Just to be clear, everyone, we're looking for just your interests and whatever sources of emissions we've got identified, or anything you heard about from Brian today, or anything in general that you're interested in identifying for the district that you're interested in looking into. You're not constrained to the things that we've identified on the map. Excuse me, everyone. One more note, everyone. Excuse me. Excuse me. I want to also, based on our conversations today, I think it's would be a great idea if you could let us know of your concerns about pollution sources outside of the community as well. So identify those for us as well.
Okay, committee members, if we're done, let's wrap it up. We good? Sal, Gabby, forgive me. So. Committee members, Linda. Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Linda, let's, we want to go.
Okay, everybody, let's get back to your seats. We've got another topic to talk about real quick.
If consensus can't be reached and we have to vote, does that also include the public or is it just committee members?
Just committee.
Okay.
Okay, we've got about 15 minutes before we want to close our second meeting out. So we want to thank everyone for coming tonight. But we'd also like this opportunity to talk about future meetings and topics. So with that, and to kind of get the ball rolling, the district would like to, well, really look at some deadlines in terms of some housekeeping and the AB 617 calendar. They'd also like to talk about air monitoring plan requirements. And last but not least, the initial discussion of air monitoring needs. So let me just repeat those just to get the ball rolling for future discussion. Initial discussion of air monitoring needs, AB 617 calendaring and deadlines for work product, et cetera, and air monitoring plan requirements. So committee members, are there anything else that you would like to add to future discussions based on January's meeting and what we discussed tonight, and then we can go to comments from the public and conclude the meeting.
And Jimmy, maybe I can clarify that first topic. It's really going to be a calendar that shows what we hope to cover from an air district perspective for each of the next meetings. So it'll be a extended first look at future agendas. But we're also looking for input from you on what additional topics you want to see covered. So that'll be the first thing we talk about next time. So what we're hoping to get is if those three topics of discussion look good for next time, fine. If you want something else covered, let us know right now, and we'll try to squeeze it in next meeting or the following.
Sorry, go ahead, John.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's we'll have a whole presentation about what we're hoping to get out of the error monitoring plan. But you're right, it's we're currently in the acquisition mode, getting a whole bunch of monitoring stations, portable monitoring stations, that we can put on a roof or in a trailer or in a van and measure pollutants concentrations for some period of time and then move to another location. And so we're going to talk about what the state expects to see in an air quality monitoring plan and then start gathering input from the committee about what their monitoring interest is. So I'm glad you asked that question. Where we want to put monitors, what we want to monitor for, those are the kinds of things we're going to talk about.
For most of us who live here, I think some of the concerns are seasonal. It's worse in certain periods of the year than others. So we'll be able to develop the monitoring plan to handle concentrations, time of year, location, and
yeah, absolutely. That's another great question, John. we don't plan on, you know, monitoring for 3 months and then leaving CHAPTER. This is a, you know, multi-year commitment.
So for those who are concerned that are outside of the boundary, like the people that live in Cherokee Strip or the colony, you know, having monitoring stations in those locations and also being able to identify emitters of pollutants that might have a greater impact on the colony than maybe where I live up on Oleander Avenue.
That's right. We would have the ability to test the air, test the quality of the air in those locations to see if there's some aberration. You know, they're higher than other locations, and that kind of gives us a clue that we would want to look more in depth in that area to find out what's causing that higher source of emissions.
So those are the kinds of things we're going to talk about next meeting.
That is correct.
Exciting.
Okay.
No sé si la pregunta sea un poco tonta, pero...
I don't know if the question is... ¿sea aquí?
Pero pienso que aquí no están incluidas las lecherías porque no están...
I don't see where the dairies are included.
So, Brian mentioned that these were... hold on a second. That makes it easier. Brian mentioned that... as he was making his presentation, that this only included sources within the boundaries. So as we, you know, one of the things that I would hope is that people identify dairies as a source of emissions of interest, and then we'll bring those into this discussion. But right now, you're right. Those emissions were only within the boundary.
Gracias.
And please, if the public has any comments, those cards will be summarized and basically given to the committee prior to our next month's meeting. So with that, does the committee have any other questions? Tom?
So kind of bothers me that the district did not immediately in November start monitoring PM2.5 like next door to your ozone monitor. Or maybe you did, but we're missing this whole winter season, so now we have to wait a whole nother year to see what PM2.5 does during the worst season. And then we get to start talking about it. After that, the results of that monitoring. But is there any have you done any monitoring secretly that you're not going to reveal on PM2.5 here in Shafter in the last 2 months?
I'm not sure how I can answer that question, Tom, if it's secret monitoring that I am not going to reveal. Not to my knowledge, no. But it's a great idea. So let me see what we can do right away to get monitoring of PM2.5 in this area.
Because it's critical. My personal monitoring, which you can just throw in the trash, shows that Shafter's air the last 2 months for PM2.5 was about 10% worse than at California and Stockdale, where you monitor, where the monitors used to inform us what our air quality is. I know you use that monitor, and then you maybe adjust it, but then you're telling people what to expect here each day. Yet we've seen through personal monitoring that our air here has actually been worse than that location. And we need more reliable data, as you would say, to see if that's true. But we're missing this whole season. I'm very disappointed that last November you guys didn't put up a PM2.5 monitor here in Shafter as soon as Shafter was chosen. It's critical to this whole process.
Just wondered if from the last meeting and this meeting, if the results of the posted things would be available as minutes or maybe even just pictures snapped or something that were on the flip charts. Are those on the website? Okay.
So with that, we now would like to open the meeting with 5 till 8 to the public for any comment. Anyone, we didn't receive any speaker cards tonight. And if anyone would like to step up to the podium, now's your opportunity. If you could just state your name and organization or resident, that would be great.
Sure, I'll try and make this quick. Sorry about that. My name is Vince Saragosa. I'm not from Shafter. I do represent an organization dealing with Food Policy Council. But I had a question. You had mentioned that Brian did on area-wide emissions, and I'm not sure how much detail you're going to have at looking at VOCs regarding pesticide applications. And if that's under your jurisdiction or whether it's under the jurisdiction of the California Department of Pesticide Regulation. But it would be, I think, helpful to look at, it's a mobile emission, so you would have to have monitoring sites. And some of these sensitive receptor sites are schools as well as residential. And on that table, I put down my thoughts, but I summarized something that I believe the state has regulated or will be regulating the neurotoxin called chlorpyrifos. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly. But it appears a lot of that pesticide application is being applied on an annual basis in Wasco and Shafter area. And in 2010, for example, 632 pounds were applied. I'm getting this from a state health report. And of that 632 pounds that were applied, 51% were in the Shafter-Wasco area, near schools within a quarter mile of the centroid. Some schools that the report indicated was Maple Elementary. Anybody here from the school district? Probably not. General Shafter Elementary. And also some other schools, which are Wasco Union Elementary and Semi-Tropic Elementary. So I'm just saying these receptor sites may benefit from monitoring based on emissions from pesticides such as VOCs and or neurotoxins. And I'm just wondering if that's something that can be considered as you go forward in your methodology and planning. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a partial answer to you for you. We heard about pesticides when we asked the group. We started hearing about pesticides at last month's meeting here, and probably in the initial kickoff meeting that we had invited the community in. So we've reached out to the Department of Pesticide Regulation. You're quite right. State law prohibits my agency from doing anything with pesticides, literally anything, except for where it's in a container, a stationary source, then we can regulate it. But if it's field applied, we have no authority. So we've talked to them about, it's probably better to say we've initiated the discussion to get DPR to come to one of these meetings and talk about pesticide use. And there's evidently been some monitoring in the area as well, monitoring of the air around pesticide uses. And so we want to get them here to this group and talk about what they're doing and give the committee a chance and the public a chance to talk to them as well. From a committee perspective, looking for emissions reductions in that arena, we can certainly, as a committee, try to figure out some things that we want as requests of the Department of Pesticide Regulation. Beyond that, you know, we're going to be stuck with dealing with a state authority, state regulatory agency.
Thank you, Dave. Any other public comment? Sir, if you'd like to step up, your name, please.
Just a follow-up question. So on the, I guess for this group or for you in monitoring, and let's say that you do find chlorpyrifos or any other ones that are very high, so what's your responsibility then? I understand that there's other agencies who are responsible, so what happens?
We're figuring it out as we go. That's an excellent question. If we are able to monitor some high levels of pesticides, say we talk to DPR and we hear, you know, what they're seeing, and then in our monitoring we see something else, we've got a data point to share with the state that says, look, there might be an issue here that you're not aware of. So that's one great thing that could come out of this air quality monitoring process. We've actually had some fairly intense battles with DPR over the years, the Department of Pesticide Regulation, as a air quality agency, to try to work with them to, you know, regulate pesticides. And it hasn't always been a wonderful relationship. But, you know, we'll definitely make sure that anything that we find like that is a part of the record. And you know, as a committee, we can decide what to do with that record, you know, in terms of requests of DPR or, you know, whoever we wanted to give that information to.
Let's say that if the monitor is placed in sensitive areas like the schools or areas where children are parked, if high levels come in, like start reading high levels of pesticides, is it possible to work with the Ag commissioners to come and do some testing, like residue testing, to find whoever's responsible, the party that's responsible?
Well, the short answer is that's kind of exactly what this committee is all about, is to take it, to examine the source of emissions and try to figure out ways to get emissions reductions. In a situation where there might be an emergency, I think it probably wouldn't be the committee doing that. It would be, you know, direct communication with emergency officials and that kind of thing. But where it's not an emergency situation, what you're describing is exactly what this committee is about, is trying to figure out where emissions are coming from, and especially, you know, anomalous, strange emissions that we don't expect to see. We need to find out where those are coming from and, you know, trace them back to the source and see if we can get them reduced. In doing that, we're going to go to the people that are responsible for regulating whatever kinds of emissions those are. For pesticides, the Ag Department is partially responsible for, but so is the Department of Pesticide Regulation. So whoever, you know, whatever the source is, whatever, you know, agency is responsible for regulating that source, that's who we're going to bring in to try to address the situation. Well, I think we will have, at least we will invite DPR to come to this group and have a discussion about their work here. If we actually, in our monitoring, find some problems, I think we're going to have to address those based on the specifics of what's going on when we find, you know, when we monitor.
Anyone else? Miss, if you'd like to go to the podium.
In your conversations with DPR, did it, or
with CARB, did it ever come up, the concept of the air district being able to regulate certain pesticides? Because as pesticides as a class, the air district doesn't really have jurisdiction over, but pesticides that are also considered toxic air contaminants, which chlorpyrifos right now might be considered, the air district in the battles you said you had with DPR, that's what
those
came out of it?
Those are exactly the battles that we had. Were,
right.
Can we find ways to regulate these toxic air emissions? And the answer was not only no, but, well, you know what comes next. The state law says something like DPR has sole authority to regulate pesticides in their pesticidal use.
Right.
And so, yes, we've had those battles, and we lost on the basis of state law forbidding us from doing it.
Right, but I think, in their pesticidal use, and that leaves room for the air district outside of its pesticidal use when it's no longer in its fumigation role, that's where air, and there's case law to support it.
Sing it to the choir.
Right, so in those did that come out of the conversations for this program?
This has been years in the making. I mean, the air district has been regulating sources of pollution in one form or another of an air district for 40 years now. And when in 1992, when this unified air district was formed, we made a concentrated effort at seeing if we could move into the pesticide regulation world. Mm-hmm. Not all of us were excited about that because it obviously comes with a lot of baggage. But the answer was no, absolutely not. We did win when it came to regulating stationary sources, mm-hmm. but that was it. And even then, it was only after it was emitted from the fumigation use. Not we couldn't do anything to regulate how it was used.
Okay, thank you.
I'm assuming that these contaminants are, you can monitor them.
Hello?
Yeah, okay. So we can't, there are monitoring stations that can monitor those pesticides. There are systems in place that but you could put them. Would it be within this committee's ability to, with some of the grant money, actually have monitoring stations in sensitive areas for those, even though you're not responsible for them, at least there's a continuous way to monitor that? And this committee might have some influence over something like that.
So in case you didn't hear, the question was, is there an opportunity for this committee to recommend that we actually monitor for pesticides in sensitive locations? And the answer is yes. Although we can't do anything to regulate it, we can monitor it.
Is there anyone else? So I'd like to thank the committee members and the general public for participating tonight. And one last item. Since you all came out tonight, the district has a kids calendar for 2019 that we all encourage you to please pick up as you leave. They're free, and they're great drawings. We'll be in touch. The next meeting will be in mid-February, and we'll notify you with details. Thanks again, and good night.